Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, your host. Tell Us Something awakens imagination, empowers storytellers, and connects the Missoula community through the transformative power of personal storytelling. It is a celebration of each other, our stories, and how we move through the world together. All of the stories at Tell Us Something are true. Stories last for 10 minutes and are told from memory. Everyone is welcome to tell a story. The Missoula community comes together for a night of true personal stories, shared live, focused on a theme. Everyone has a story. What's yours? This episode of the Tell Us Something podcast was recorded in front of a live audience on September 11th, 2015, at the Denison Theater at the University of Montana in Missoula, Montana, as part of the Montana Book Festival. There was no theme for this event. This episode comes to us from Susan Maruca and is titled On a Mission at Mr. Donut. Thank you for listening.
Normally these are at the Top Hat and everybody's drinking. So I want everybody to just like take a moment and like pretend like you've been drinking for the last 45 minutes, okay? Some of us have been. Some of us have to in order to tell the kind of story I'm going to tell right now. So I left work at 8:15 a.m., got out of the building and was heading home, and I got about halfway to my car, and I could see that there was a man sleeping in the front passenger seat. And I kind of stopped and peered into the car, and I realized it was Mr. Sly Eyes. And I was totally exhausted and sweaty, and I was reeking of donuts, and I was covered in powdered sugar, and I immediately started fretting about having worn the wrong underwear. I was 19. I was working the midnight shift at Mr. Donut in Buckhannon, West Virginia. And I realized that Mr. Sly Eyes, a nearly perfect stranger in more ways than one, was kindly waiting for me to get off work. It had been surreptitiously arranged earlier that morning by a third party that Mr. Sly Eyes was my BCJ, my best candidate for the job. And the job, acting head of OVL, Operation Virginity Loss. I was 19, I was a virgin, and I felt like a very old virgin. I was not comfortable with this. And my apologies to anyone in the audience who extended their virginity beyond the age of 19, but to put this in context, I did grow up in West Virginia, and I don't want to encourage stereotypes, but I didn't know any other 19-year-old virgins. So, so why was I a virgin? I had no religious or moral or biological impediment. But I did have an obstacle, and my obstacle was that I was a PFN, a plump, funny nerd. And the thing about being a plump, funny nerd is that no matter your gender, it can take a while, and I mean like years or a lifetime or maybe even longer to learn how to use your plump, funny nerdiness to your social and sexual advantage. To turn, like, funny strange into funny witty and to find that line between, like, sad self-pity and endearing self-deprecation and to really trust that there are people out there in the world besides yourself who think that mathematics is not only a valid academic pursuit, but a damn fine recreational one as well. And at the age of 19, I had not figured any of this out. And I feared being a virgin forever. I mean, it was possible. My own father, my ultra-rational scientist father, had just said to me earlier that year that he would not have been surprised if my older sister or I had gotten pregnant in high school because, quote, sex is what people do. Sex is what people do! And I had been behaving like what people did was marvel at fractals and watch Mystery Science Theater and eat peanut butter and fluff sandwiches. I mean, my friends were having sex and I was not. My father thought I was having sex and I was not. I was not normal. And the appeal of being normal, as in sexually desirable, was overwhelming. So I had gotten this job at the Mr. Donut in between my freshman, sophomore years of college, and I was living at home with my parents, driving their car to and from work at night when they didn't need it. While working at Mr. Donut, three things had happened. And the first thing was that I made this amazing friend, Chrissy, who was my perfect complement. Chrissy was not plump, she was not a nerd, and if I was remotely funny, she was just fun, and she taught me things like how to be excessive with eyeliner and how to drink alcohol during the daytime and how to bend rules and not get caught or at least try. And the second thing that happened was that every night while you all were sleeping, those of you who were born at that point, I was spending hours operating a stainless steel miniature phallus and pump machine to fill hundreds of powdered, frosted, and glazed donuts full of jelly and cream. And the third thing that happened was that I undertook Operation Virginity Loss, and Chrissy agreed to help me, making her my best HSF, helpful slutty friend. Chrissy was perfect to manage OVL because she was acquainted with many men who were less than scrupulous about their sexual partners. And she had introduced me to Mr. Sly Eyes in a sort of weird 2 a.m. interview earlier that evening. And he was a tall, older man of 22 with this lazy, confident manner and eyes that didn't actually open all the way. And he was absolutely perfect. He met all the requirements to execute my deflowering. The requirements at this point were not very stringent. They had been discovered empirically by Chrissy's prior failed attempts at OVL. Misters, pot dealer, married man, and trouble, respectively, introduced us to the BCJ requirements of oral hygiene, singleness, and not being a drunk looking for a fight. So back to Mr. Sly Eyes, my current BCJ, sitting in my parents' car early on a July morning. I knew my dad needed the car straight away, but I was on a mission. I was on an important mission. So the condition of my undergarments notwithstanding, I tried to quash my nervousness, and I slid into the car, and I said hello, and I asked Mr. Sly Eyes if he needed a ride. And he said he did. And I knew he was about to become my Mr. Donut, and I his Mrs. Donut Hole. So we drove to a kind of remote-ish wooded area and parked the car and started making out. And it's amazing how far you can get in the front seat of a 1983 Ford Fairmont when you're willing to make use of the space above the dashboard for your feet. And I should have been really excited, or at least anticipating satisfaction, but I was actually just terror-filled, and my terror was peppered with wrongness, and I was barely able to master it. And as things progressed, my wrongness-ridden terror did a really funny thing and broke loose and flung open the cage door of my IVR, my inner voice of reason, which had been imprisoned for some weeks. And my poor, startled IVR, upon finding me in this situation, said, "Susan, what are you doing? What are you doing?" Oh, and she was right. Because in all of my eager fantasizing about shedding my status as a virgin, I had really not allowed it to deeply register that in order to achieve that, I would have to become naked and vulnerable. Literally face to face with another naked, vulnerable human being. And amidst all of our collective embarrassment, I would have to let him insert an entire body part into my person. And when that finally registered, I stumbled upon my most important requirement for my BCJ, which is that he and I needed to know each other and like each other and probably even trust each other. God, I wish I had had this revelation like 20 minutes earlier. Yeah, like, you know, back when my car was still parked at the Mr. Donut. But thanks to my IVR's sweet cousin, MQT, miraculously quick thinking, both Mr. Sly Eyes and I were able to culminate in climactic fashion without any body part insertion. Now, my scenario was faked. It was my first, obviously, but justifiable, I thought, in the service of the greater good, because it turns out Mr. Sly Eyes, to his credit, was like in no great hurry to wrap things up. And at that point, like, I really needed to get out of there. So we got ourselves reclothed and upright, and I was just about to bask in the relief of my narrow escape when I looked up and I saw that the windshield of my dad's car was shattered from one side to the other. Apparently, the combination of my feet on the dashboard and my overzealous orgasmic performance got me out of one bad situation and right into another. Note to self, before you leave college, take an acting class. So, 30 minutes later, virginity intact, channeling my inner Chrissy, I was explaining to my father how I was driving and I got behind a coal truck. See, there's a coal mine in between the Mr. Donut and my house. And some stuff like came loose and a piece of coal like broke free and came off and it hit the windshield and just shattered it. And my dad was like, "Oh." And I'm like, "Brilliant story." And he's like, "Well, that's good. That's good, because we can get the coal company to pay for the damages. What was the license plate on that truck?" Oh, Dad, I was so worried about driving safely and, like, looking through the cracked glass. I didn't pay attention to that. I'm sorry. And he's like, "Oh, that's okay. I'll just call our neighbor. He's a foreman at the mine. He'll know how to advise me on this situation." So a couple days later, my dad sat me down and said, "I don't know what you were doing in or with the car, but I do know that the windshield was not broken by a piece of coal. And I know this for three reasons. First, I examined the glass and there is no coal residue at the point of impact. Second, the pattern of the break clearly indicates it was due to pressure from the inside." See where the nerdiness comes from? "Third, I spoke with our neighbor, and he informed me that the company runs no coal trucks ever on Sunday mornings, which is the day of the week that this accident occurred. So, you don't have to tell me what you were doing, as long as you agree to pay for the windshield yourself." And I was broke, but I paid for that windshield, and I did it buoyantly, because what I gained from the BWL, the broken windshield lesson, was worth every penny. Thank you. Somebody else might need this.
Tell Us Something is proud to be fiscally sponsored by the Missoula Community Foundation, a 501c3 organization. Missoula Community Foundation has been providing leadership to Missoula nonprofits and inspiring long-term philanthropy in Missoula since 2007. For the good of Missoula, forever. MissoulaCommunityFoundation.org. Thank you for your support of live storytelling and local art. Our title sponsor, the bookstore at the University of Montana. A local bookstore serving the students, faculty, and staff of the University of Montana, as well as the Missoula community. MontanaBookstore.com. Fact & Fiction, where books, authors, ideas, and readers interact. FactAndFictionBooks.com. Montana Book Festival, a celebration of the written word. MontanaBookFestival.org. Haley Faust. Haley Faust is a graphic and media designer based in the heart of the Rocky Mountains. From concept to final design launch, Haley puts her heart and soul into your design project. HaleyFaust.com. Zoo City Apparel, custom screen printing. ZooCityApparel.BigCartel.com. Thanks to Cash for Junkers, who provided the music for the podcast. Find them at CashForJunkersMusic.com. Rock and Rudy's, your source for the best music, gifts, and more. Great music, great people. RockandRudy's.com. Podcast production by Nathan Zavolny of Missoula Soundworks. MissoulaSoundworks.com. And thank you to everyone who attends the events, those of you who download the podcasts, and to the storytellers, Karen McNenny, Chris Latray, Susan Maruka, and Josh Slotnick. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Check the website to find out how you can tell your own story and to learn about the themes for 2016. TellUsSomething.org.